Welcome to the Free Will Show. I'm one of your hosts, Taylor Cedar.
And I'm your other host, Matt Flummer. In this episode, we will be talking about the problem of luck, which is a challenge for libertarian views of free will.
Our guest in this episode is Alfred Mealy. And as always, if you have any questions for us that you'd like us to address in our Q&A episode at the end of the season, feel free to reach out to us through our website, thefreewillshow.com, or via social media.
Thanks for listening.
Enjoy. I'm very happy to introduce our guest today is Alfred Mealy. Al is the William H. and Lucille T. Workmeister Professor of Philosophy at Florida State University. He has published several books and many articles on free will and moral responsibility, including a book on the topic of today's episode, Free Will and Luck, published in 2006 by Oxford University Press. Al, could you tell us and our listeners a little bit about yourself, your work, and how you came to be interested in working on free will?
Sure. And thanks for inviting me to do this.
Of course.
Well, let's see. I got my PhD from the University of Michigan in 1979. And my first job was at Davidson College in North Carolina. And I was there for 21 years. And in 2000, I moved to Florida State University, where I met both of you guys a few years ago.
Yeah.
I don't think I wrote anything on free will until my book Autonomous Agents, which was published in 1995. So I'd been at it. I'd been an assistant professor and an associate. And I guess by then I was a full professor for quite a while. I'm especially interested in issues surrounding human behavior, like self-control, weakness of will, intentional action, and so on. And I had been working on that sort of thing. And I thought, well, it's about time to tackle free will. And I tackled it under the guise autonomy back then, partly because some people were understanding free will in a sort of mystical way, and I had a thoroughly naturalistic understanding of it. Oh, I should say, I started my career as an Aristotle scholar, so that's part of my background, too,
yeah.
And especially Aristotle on action.
Yeah, thanks for that. They're very interesting. So since we're talking about luck today, this term luck is used in all sorts of ways. People say they have luck with romantic interests, lucky breaks in sports, maybe good or bad fortune. In what sense are we using this word, and how is it relevant to free will?
Okay. In free will and luck, I say something like, well, I'm using the term luck, and if you can think of a better term for what I have in mind, we can use that. So I didn't want to place a lot of weight on the term luck, but what I had in mind was occurrences that affect your life, how your life goes, and you don't have any control over them. And luck comes in good and bad. So good luck would be an occurrence that was good for you, but you didn't have any control over it. And, bad luck is the opposite. And one reason I used luck rather than chance is some people think, well, there are only chances really in indeterministic universes, not deterministic ones. But they're happy to say that there's luck in both kinds of universe. And I wanted to talk about luck, or the sort of thing I was interested in both contexts.
Great. And in this episode, we're going to focus on a problem of luck for that's at least allegedly a problem for libertarian free will. In a later episode, we'll talk about moral luck generally, where a person's praiseworthiness or blameworthiness relative to someone else can depend on factors outside of their control. But if we're going to focus on the problem of luck for libertarian free will, maybe we should have you say something about that target. What do we mean by libertarian free will? And maybe you could tell us any other concepts that would be important to know going into the different formulations of this problem.
Okay. Well, libertarians have a view that has really two main parts. And one is free will is incompatible with determinism. And I can talk about determinism if you want me to, but maybe you've covered that in a previous podcast.
We have, but it might be helpful just to give a brief gloss here.
Okay, I will. First, the second component is that we have free will. Some people act freely. So component one, free will is incompatible with determinism. Component two, some of us act freely, which entails, of course, that our universe is indeterministic, that is not deterministic. And determinism is really just this idea. A universe is deterministic, that is, determinism is true of a universe, if and only if, from a complete description of the laws of nature and a complete description of the state of the universe at a given time, everything else that's true of the universe follows by entailment. So the way to think about it is, if the laws of nature are in place shortly after the Big Bang, then how the universe unfolds, if it's deterministic, is set. There are different ways to understand all this. That's a simple way. Mm-hmm.
Some people complain that libertarianism requires that our actions be uncaused. So if they are uncaused, then there's some kind of problem with that. So what's the problem that people point out with our actions being uncaused?
You know, frankly, I can't even make sense of the notion of an uncaused action. That is, I think uncaused actions are impossible. I think of actions as events caused in a certain way.
So it's just true by definition that actions are caused according to your view.
Yeah, and let me give you a little argument for it too. There's a challenge in a famous old paper by Donald Davidson. It was published in 1963. The title is Actions, Reasons, and Causes. And it's a response to people who are claiming that actions are uncaused. So consider doing something for a reason. And most of our actions are done for reasons. So we're considering doing something for a reason. And imagine a person has two different reasons to do a thing, but he does it only for one of those reasons, not for both. The example I like to use is, it features a guy named Al, who has two different reasons to mow his lawn early tomorrow morning. And one of the reasons has to do with convenience. If he mows it early, he can get that task out of the way and get down to business. And the other reason has to do with vengeance. His neighbor mowed her lawn early yesterday. He can get back at her by mowing early today. So he's got these two different reasons to do it, but we're told by somebody who somehow knows he only did it for one of those two reasons. And the person also tells us, and you know, one of those reasons was among the causes of his mowing, and the other one wasn't. So what do you conclude in that case? That he did it for the reason that wasn't among the causes of his mowing, or for the reason that was? And, you know, the answer seems to be obvious. Now, it gets tricky because you need to wonder what reasons are, how we're going to understand them. And there I'm very broad-minded. So Davidson thought of reasons as belief-desire pairs, like a desire to get back at his neighbor and a belief that he could do that by mowing early. Other people think of reasons as states of the world. And I said, however you think of them, either the reasons or your recognition of them or the neural realizers of these things will be among the causes of actions done for reasons. So it's not just a stipulation. There's a kind of challenge there. It's really hard for the anti-causalists to answer it. And one game I've played over the years is encourage them to answer it, I get an answer, and then I counterexample it. I think the last time I did this was in my book, Aspects of Agency, which was published in 2017. So it's pretty recent.
Great. So libertarians about free will say that we have free will and that requires indeterminism of some sort, but doesn't require, at least on your view, that actions that are done with libertarian free will be uncaused. So maybe we could say a little bit more about what kind of causation would have to be involved here. Would this be probabilistic causation? It would have to be indeterministic causation of some sort. But I guess a lot of people worry that once you allow this kind of causation, it looks like it's just a matter of chance, random chance, that a person does what they do if it was only probabilistically or indeterministically caused. So could you say a little bit more about that worry?
Sure, I will. And before I do, though, I'll say that at this point, if you reject the non-causal libertarian view, there are two different ways people go. One way is indeterministic causation, the sort of thing you talked about, indeterministic causation by states and events. Mm-hmm. And the other way to go is agent causation, and we can talk about that later if you want. So, right, if you go with indeterministic causation by states and events, then a certain worry about luck arises. Now, the typical libertarian claims that you do a thing freely at a time only if there's another possible world where things are exactly the same up until then, and at that time, you do something else instead. So, for example, you're taking a hike, you come to a fork in the road, you can go left or you can go right, and in the actual world, you go left. Well, according to standard libertarians, that action of going left or your decision to go left is free only if there's another possible world where everything's the same up until then and you do something else instead. Maybe you decide to go right or you stop and think about what to do or whatever. So if you have a view like that, then you're going to have what we can call a cross-world difference required for deciding freely, say if we're talking about decisions. So there's going to be that difference. And it might look like, and it does to some people look like, that difference really is just a matter of luck. And you can try to model it in different ways to bring out the apparent luck. So here's one way to do it. Suppose we wanted a neural model of a free indeterministic decision. Free decision according to event causal libertarians. And we think about, okay, what's the model going to look like? Well, here's one idea. When a person is uncertain about what to do, that is at a point at which a decision would seem to be called for, a tiny neural roulette wheel starts spinning in his head. And onto the wheel bounces a little tiny neural ball. The ball is indeterministic. The roulette wheel is indeterministic. Certain numbers of slots get assigned to the different options. Like maybe there are 100 slots on the wheel, and 30 get assigned to decide to go left, 30 get assigned to decide to go right, and 40 get assigned, split up into other things. So the ball bounces and bounces, and then eventually it lands somewhere, and we can picture the ball's landing where it lands as the person's making the decision. That's the neural realizer of his making the decision. And if we think of it like that, we might think, geez, you know, it's just a matter of luck that he decided to go left rather than decided to go right. If the ball had landed over a bit, he would have made the other decision. You can also get this with the rollback idea, and I think you guys were going to ask me about rollbacks. Would it be out of place to do it now?
No, I think, yeah, that's a great idea. So how is the rollback argument different from this one, or is it basically the same worry just with different words?
Yeah, it's sort of a different way to picture a very similar worry. And, you know, there are technical worries about the rollback sort of scenario because it's been around so long, people have had time to think about it. But here's the rollback idea. So now remember, what we're talking about is a libertarian view according to which you make a decision freely at a given time, only if there's another possible world where everything's the same up until then, and you do something else instead at that time. So here's another way to picture it. So time rolls on, let's say Matt. Matt gets to the fork in the road, and he's going to decide to go left or decide to go right. And he decides to go left. And we say, well, that was a free decision, only if everything being the same up until then, there's a world in which he does otherwise. But instead of thinking of possible worlds, we think, okay, well, suppose we could roll back time. This is Peter Van Inwagen's thought experiment, and it's God who's rolling back time. So, and it's rolling back the entire universe, really. It plays forward up to a certain point in time. Then you roll it back a bit, and you play it forward. And Matt's approaching the fork in the road. Nothing changes, nothing changes. He gets to that very moment at which he decided to go left, and this time he decides to go right. And then we think, okay, well, that's cool, two different ways. And then we play it back, and we play it forward again. And we get, say, he stops and thinks about what to do. And we can play it back and forward 1,000 times and see the distribution of outcomes. And then what we might think is, well, geez, it's sort of like a weird coin flip or a toss of dice in the head, or like the roulette wheel. And so it looks like a matter of luck in the end that he goes one way rather than the other. Oh, all right. So it looks like a matter of luck. And then we think, well, yeah, but luck was defined partly in terms of control. So it might look like it's really not up to Matt what to do. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have the right sort of control for that to be the case.
Yeah.
Now, I can add one more thing now. If I'm talking too much, you guys let me know.
We will. Go ahead.
So I can add one more thing right now. So some people sometimes say, in response to the rollback argument, and maybe in response to my roulette wheel thing, they say, well, you know, you're supposed to be able to do otherwise, according to event causal libertarians. So it's no surprise that it turns out the way it does. And since you're committed to thinking it's going to turn out that way, this luck problem can't really be a problem for libertarians. But that argument is flawed in a way that it's obvious to see if you think about another sort of argument. So there was a time when some compatibilists claimed that determinism needed to be true in order for people to have free will, that determinism is a necessary condition for free will. And now suppose, you know, people argue, well, determinism actually precludes free will, as people have argued, including Peter Van Inwagen, but many people. And then this compatibilist says, well, it can't preclude free will because it's required for it. Well, it could turn out that something is required for free will and that it precludes it, in which case free will would be impossible.
Yeah. So before we move on to the next formulation of luck, I did have one question I think might be appropriate here. So the way that you characterized luck was about control, that something happens that's out of your control. In the way that you just described the rollback argument and the neural roulette wheel, what you do seems to be still up to you. So have libertarians responded in this way that, yeah, well, there is a difference, but I'm the one that's making the choice. And so it's not a matter of chance or it's not up to me. It's not that it's, am I saying this right? It's still up to me.
Yeah, I know. I see. And yeah, you know, Mark Balliger responds like that. I don't know that he explicitly mentions the rollback or roulette wheel stuff, but that's his reply, that in the end, it's Ralph, and Ralph is thinking about whether to stay in Mayberry or go to New York. Robbie Ann is in Mayberry, and I don't know, nice jobs in New York. I think you're supposed to be thinking of the Andy Griffith Show. And Mark says, yeah, in the end, what matters is that Ralph makes the decision. And that is a way to go. But let me go back and try to motivate the luck worry, which I haven't really done. I just gave you the model. Yeah, maybe let it be Harry, and he's thinking about whether to cheat his siblings out of their inheritance. And so Harry's thinking about it, and he thinks about it long and hard. He thinks he really shouldn't cheat them, but in the actual world, in the end, he ends up deciding to cheat them. And now there's another world where everything's the same up until the moment of decision. And in that world, he decides not to cheat them out of their inheritance. He decides to do what he thinks he should do. And now we look at those two worlds and we think, well, isn't it just a matter of luck that he made one decision rather than the other in the actual world? He could just as easily have made the other decision, let's say. In which case he wouldn't be blameworthy, and maybe he would deserve some praise. So can we really blame him for what he did, given that he could just as easily have done otherwise? And then you can tell the story this way. So Harry tries really hard to resist the temptation to cheat his siblings out of their inheritance. And he does the best he can to resist it. But in the end, he decides to do the bad thing. But in the next world over, where everything's the same up until then, his effort at self-control succeeds. And he decides to do the right thing. It looks like Harry has no control over the difference between the worlds, because everything's the same up until the moment of decision. And so we might have a hard time thinking that it would be appropriate to blame him for his bad decision or give him any credit for his good one.
Yeah, that's a gripping way of putting the problem, I think. Could I get you to say a little bit more about these two different types of libertarian views? We've distinguished the non-causal views of action from causal views of action. And then if you're a libertarian and you think that actions are events that are caused, you could be an event causal libertarian or an agent causal libertarian. We haven't gotten into that before on this show, so maybe you could say a little bit about the difference between those two types of libertarian view.
Okay, sure. So on the event causal libertarian view, causes of actions are things like reasons or apprehensions of reasons or neural realizers of reasons, deliberation, you know, thinking about what to do, and so on. It's the causes are things of the same sort that a compatibilist would bring forward as causes of free actions. And for agent causationists, the causal relation obtains between the agent and the upshot. Now, different agent causationists differ about the upshot. Sometimes it's an action, and sometimes it's the result of an action. Mm. We don't need to get into that.
Right.
The way to picture it is like this. For an event causal libertarianism, we have the causes, and then imagine an arrow connecting those causes to the upshot. And on both sides of the arrow, we have events and states. But for agent causation, on the left side of the arrow, we have the agent, the whole human being. And on the right side, we have the upshot. And causation by the agent isn't reducible to causation by states and events. And then the idea is agent causation is special in a way. The buck is going to stop with the agent because the agent himself or herself isn't caused, isn't the kind of thing that is caused. So the causal chain stops there. Although, you know, you get these integrated agent causal views where the agents are influenced by reasons, and then the agent together with reasons causes the action. That's not a pure agent causal view. It's integrated.
I have another follow-up question about the rollback argument. Now that we've distinguished different kinds of libertarian views, do you think that the agent causal libertarian has some advantage in responding to this problem over the event causal libertarian? I know that some agent causalists will appeal to agent causation in their response to the problem of luck.
Yeah, they do. One thing I've argued in, a few different places is regarding the problem of luck, agent causationists do know better than event causal libertarians. And I'll give you a short version of why. So let's just stick with Matt going to the fork in the road. And in one world, he makes one decision. In another world where everything's the same up until then, he makes another decision. And let's say he agent causes the decision. And then I might ask, so why was it that in world one, he agent caused the decision to go left, and in world two, the agent caused the decision to go right? And it seems to me that there's just not going to be any answer to that question, because everything is the same in both worlds up until then. There is no difference to appeal to in explaining the difference in outcome. Then I might say, well, then it looks like just as much a matter of luck that he agent causes this decision as that he agent causes that one, as it is in the case of the event causal libertarian, that he makes this decision rather than makes that one. Now, the reply sometimes is, oh, and, you know, it'd be better to do this with Harry and the morally important stuff, but we'll stick with this. The reply to that sometimes is, well, agent causation is just a brute power of control such that when it's exercised, no luck is involved. And then I think, well, that's what magic is, too. So explain to me how this is different from magic. Sorry to be sarcastic.
No, that's quite.
Some of my best friends are agent causation.
Well, so we've talked about a few different formulations of the problem of luck. We focused on this sort of cross-world formulation and the rollback formulation. Al, do you want to say a little bit about your response to the problem of luck that you've developed in Free Will and Luck and elsewhere?
Yeah, I will. It's really, you know, a long story. It takes us all the way back to Little Agent's first free actions, but I'll give you the short version of it. So I think that the problem of present luck is a real problem. It's an important problem, but I also think that it has a solution. And as I see it, the solution isn't to deny that there's luck or chance there at the moment of these basically free decisions. And rather, the way to go is to explain why the luck that is there doesn't preclude the decisions being free. We could even stick for a while with the roulette wheel model. And notice that when I described it, we had different antecedent probabilities of different outcomes, different decisions, for example. And how do those probabilities get there? If they just came out of the blue every time a person made a decision, I think free will would be in serious trouble. But the way they actually come about is partly based on agents' past choices and then their learning history, what they learned from good choices, what they learned from bad choices, what they learn from their reflection on such choices, and so on. So the antecedent probabilities of any given choice, at least other than the earliest ones, partly depend on the agent's own behavior. But this is going to lead us eventually back to the first free choice or decision an agent makes. And you wonder, well, what about that one? There the antecedent probabilities don't come out of anything for which the little agent is responsible and don't come out of anything the little agent did freely, because this is the first free action or the first action for which he's morally responsible. What do you do with those agents? And my thought then is to go through, just to make it more plausible and attractive to people, to push them in the direction of the truth, we could say, is to start with moral responsibility. And we would notice that the first action for which a little kid is morally responsible is bound to be a pretty trivial action, like he decides not to pull his sister's hair this time, or not to steal his little brother's toy truck, or whatever. Or he decides to do it, you know, again. And what I think is that given the trivial nature of these actions, and given all the other handicaps a normal 4 or 5 year old kid would have, or 6, whatever you think the age is, impulse control problems, not being able to look too far into the future and so on, not being really good at calculating consequences of possible actions, given all that, the bar for moral responsibility for kids is going to be pretty low, and lower than it is for adults, say. So all we would need, given that we have a low bar, is for the kid to have enough control over what he does to get over that hurdle. Now, that gets really complicated. I probably won't go on about it. But once he's over the hurdle, it looks like now he or she can start shaping, or already has started, shaping antecedent probabilities of future actions. So by the time we get to adult actions, there's already considerable responsibility for the antecedent probabilities. They don't come out of the blue. They come in part out of past choices the kid made, his reflection, and so on. And because they don't come out of the blue, we can see the person as being responsible for what he does despite the cross-world difference in luck at the time of a future decision. That's the really short version of a very long story. And one point to emphasize about it is it doesn't reject the idea that there is cross-world luck. It embraces it and explains why it isn't a problem. Oh, and then I should also say, so I've been talking about my solution for libertarians, but I'm not a libertarian and I'm not a compatibilist either. I'm agnostic about the disagreement between compatibilism and incompatibilism. And I do my best to help out both sides, believers in free will and libertarians.
Thanks for taking us through your solution. I was going to mention something about compatibilism here because while a lot of compatibilists have raised the problem of luck for libertarians, at least nowadays, most compatibilists aren't sure that the world's deterministic. They surely don't want to require determinism in order for us to have free will. In fact, you know, many of our best, at least the majority of physicists working today interpret quantum mechanics as indeterministic. So they want to leave it open that there could be indeterminism in the world in just the places the libertarian thinks we need it for us to be free. And yet we don't really need indeterminacy in order to have free will. So do you think your solution could be sort of adopted by the compatibilist who wants to say that we could have free will even if our world is indeterministic?
Sure. I think a compatibilist could use the solution. A compatibilist who thinks no, present luck in particular is not compatible with free will, but you know, indeterminism elsewhere in the process might be okay.
Right.
Doesn't really have to worry much unless that compatibilist thinks that all of our decisions are open even at the last moment, you know, which is very unlikely. Right. So, yeah, that's one way to go. Let's see. Oh, you know, another thing I should say, I think Matt told me you were going to ask about an argument based on the problem of present luck for the falsity of libertarianism. And what I want to say about that is I never advanced such an argument. There was a time when people were discussing Mealy's argument from luck against libertarianism. And, you know, there was no such argument. And there were only two places where it could be. So I checked both of the places at this time in history. One was my book, Free Will and Luck. And the other one was a 2005 paper of mine. And I didn't see an argument in either place. I saw disclaimers. But then I thought, well, maybe I shouldn't trust myself even reading, you know, stuff I wrote. So I'll have my research assistant look into it. And you might know him, Matt. I don't know. Jason Miller?
Yeah, I think I've met him.
So he was the research assistant. He's a very conscientious guy. He read both things, and he said, no, there's no argument from luck against libertarianism, but there are a lot of disclaimers. So what I wanted to do with the problem of present luck is to push people to give me an answer to a certain question. Now, here's an analogy. In the philosophy of religion, there's a distinction between theodicies and defenses. And both have to do with the problem of evil. But a defense is a response to an argument based on evil or pain and suffering for the conclusion that God doesn't exist. And a theodicy is an actual attempted answer to the question why a perfect God would allow all the pain and suffering that there is. So if I had advanced an argument from Locke for the falsity of agent causation or whatever, I would have got, you know, rebuttals of premises and that sort of thing. But what I wanted to push people to tell me is, why is cross-world luck at the time of decision compatible with deciding freely and being more responsible for the decision? And I gave an answer to that question, my own answer. And the thought was, well, if somebody can do better, let me know. So I didn't want to offer an argument against libertarianism, and I didn't.
So thanks, Al, for talking with us today. It was a lot of fun. Where can listeners go who want to read more of your work? What online sources would you recommend?
I think the best thing to do really is to Google my name, but be sure to use Alfred Mealy instead of just Al, because if you do Al, you'll get Italian apple recipes.
Well, that might be a pleasant surprise. I was going to read about free will, but now here's this delicious apple recipe.
And my webpage should be, well, close to the top of the list, maybe at the top. And then I've done a lot of YouTube lectures, so if you were curious about them, you could Google Alfred Mealy YouTube. I think that's the best way to do it.
Sounds good. And we'll link the website and some of those videos in the show notes so the listeners can find it easily. Yeah, thanks, Al. Thanks, listeners, for tuning in. Our next episode will be on the topic of Frankfurt cases, and our guest will be Carolina Sartorio, professor of philosophy at the University of Arizona. So stay tuned for that.